From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of May, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. The state statisticians from Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota will be here with updates from their regions, and I'll talk you through North Dakota and Kansas and a couple of other places. And then we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day, Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and talk about the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn settled $7.22¼, up 10½ for the day. The December at $6.11¼, up 2. July soybeans at $6.14¾, 27¼ higher. And November new crop at $14.31½, up 17¼. The bean meal at $4.47, $4.70 higher. And the bean oil at $64.80, up 96 cents. Wheat futures July contract there at $7.41¾, up 11¼ for the soft red and the hard red. July at 7.10½, that finished 7 higher. Live cattle futures in the June at $118.62½, for 40 cents higher. Feeders in the June contract, rather August, at $148.85, up 15 cents. And lean hogs at $111.17½ per 100 pounds, 92½ lower. Crude oil at $65.25. cents, up 28 cents, and the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.14¼, just about unchanged for the day. Wayne Nelson is out of the office this afternoon. John Hester is here. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana as well. Hey, John, thanks for filling in today. I appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome. I enjoy it.
It's been, it's a turnaround Tuesday, but it's almost a surprise. The markets were down for a while in the overnight session, I think even part of the day session as well. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, I think they came out and reinforced there's a major drought in Canada. And China's buying ethanol and new crop corn and beans. There's a couple things. Farmers hold little old crop corn and beans. Brazilian farmers are abandoning some of their poorer fields. And China's rolling old crop corn into new crop corn. And they weighed that against the plantings that came out yesterday afternoon, which were 67% in the corn planted and 42% in the beans, which were, I consider, pretty huge numbers and way ahead of average. And I guess they decided the drought and the poor crops outweighed the planted acres.
Indeed they did. And then we'll have, of course, tomorrow some updates. The first one at 7 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. your time in the Eastern Time Zone from CONAB about the size of the Brazilian crop. Just off the top of my head, I'm really certain that USDA, while it will be in lockup, will have those numbers carried into them so they can put them into their world agricultural supply and demand estimate figures. And those will also include numbers from USDA NAS that will put the first supply and demand figures together for the corn and soybean crops being put in the ground in the United States. What are your expectations for those figures?
I don't know that I have any numbers in the back of my head. I just think that the USDA needs to lower the production in South America, probably corn and beans both. Now, whether they will do that or not, I don't know. I think a lot of people are expecting them to, and if that does happen, that's another bullish sentiment to this roller coaster market, as I call it.
Have farmers on new crop been willing sellers of either the cash side of the market on the way up, or have they been using the market to at least cover their options?
I think there's been some hedging done, and also the markets went up after they've hedged, that they've got out of their hedges. And I think most of the farmers on pricing fall are in the greed mode now. They think it's going a lot higher. You know, they keep hearing that $20 bean number and $8 to $9 corn number, and I think they're sitting on their hands praying that it goes there. And, you know, old crop, I think there's not much old crop left around, but I think the farmers that have some, they're, you know, selling a load here and there, selling 5,000 bushel here or there. You know, they're just not running to the elevator with it every day, but, you know, when they can get. Well, in fact, I had a little old corn left, and I sold 1,000 bushel for $7.55 last week, so.
Made you smile, didn't it?
Made me smile. And, you know, I think, you know, I might have another load or two left, but I'm just kind of sitting on it, waiting to see what happens. If it goes down a dollar, I can still survive, so. But if I had a lot of old crop or in the bin, I'd sure be taking advantage of these prices. And I'm not too sure in the back of my mind that a producer shouldn't be taking advantage of some of these new crop prices for fall. They're awful good.
Indeed. Hey, thank you very much, John. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John. We will talk to you later. John Hester is with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget that tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Central and then at 11 a.m. Central, two sets of numbers due out. The first from Brazil and CONAB, the second from USDA, which will include the first new crop numbers for corn and soybeans in the United States. Those will be up on our website at willag.org. Monday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Sunday, 67% of the corn crop around the nation had been sown. The rolling five-year average is 52%, and 20% of that crop has emerged. The five-year average is 19%. 42% of the soybeans are in the ground. That's well ahead of the 22% rolling five-year average. 10% of that crop has emerged. The five-year average is 4%. Winter wheat headed now stands at 38%. The five-year average is 46%. The condition of that crop is said to be 42% good and 7% excellent. That's up one percentage point from the previous week. Now here are statisticians from Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa with updates from their regions.
This is Rebecca Alter, statistician for the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office. Statewide, there were 5.1 days suitable for field work for the week due to precipitation. Other field activities such as spraying and applying anhydrous and dry fertilizer were slowed by sporadic rains. Topsoil moisture levels rated 10% very short, 27% short, 61% adequate, and 2% surplus. Subsoil moisture levels rated 13% very short, 39% short, 46% adequate, and 2% surplus. Statewide, 86% of the expected corn crop has been planted, 10 days ahead of the five-year average. North Central and Central Iowa farmers have less than 10% of their expected corn crop remaining to be planted. Corn emergence improved to 22% complete, an increase of 20 percentage points from the previous week. Just over two-thirds of the expected soybean crop has been planted, 15 days ahead of the five-year average. 6% of the expected soybean crop has emerged, 5 days ahead of the normal. There were reports of some farmers starting their first cutting of alfalfa. Pasture condition rated 42% good to excellent. Rain during the week helped green up some pastures. Livestock were reported to be in good condition, especially in terms of calving. For the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office, this is Rebecca Alter.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Last week was cool and wet across Illinois. There was an average of 3.5 days suitable for field work around the prairie state, and farmers used those days to plant corn and soybeans. Temperatures averaged 55.4 degrees last week, and that was 3.7 degrees below normal. Weekly rainfall totals range from 1 to 2 inches across Illinois, and the state average of 1.59 inches was more than 1/2 inch above normal for this time of year. Topsoil moisture supplies were rated 1% very short, 10 short, 63 adequate, and 26% surplus as of Sunday. Corn planting reached 74% finished. That compares to 66% 1 year ago and 61% for the 5-year average. 35% of corn acres had emerged as of Sunday compared to 28% normally. For soybeans, 57% of acres are now planted, compared to 41% 1 year ago and 25% normally. Moving on to winter wheat, 58% of acres are now headed. That compares to 38% last year and 48% normally. The condition of the Illinois wheat crop was reported as 13% very poor to poor, 17% fair, and 70% good to excellent. Pasture conditions were rated 10% very poor to poor, 20% fair, and 70% good to excellent. That is a little worse than the previous week. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Minnesota farmers were able to take advantage of 6.1 days suitable for field work during the week, and field activities included corn and soybean planting and herbicide application. Topsoil moisture supplies were rated 12% very short, 32% short, 53% adequate, and 3% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies were rated 7% very short, 33% short, 57% adequate, and 3% surplus. Dry conditions continue to be reported. Minnesota farmers planted 25% of their expected corn crop this past week for a total of 85% planted. That's 1 day behind last year, but 12 days ahead of the 5-year average. Corn was 8% emerged. That's 3 days behind average. Soybeans were 65% planted. That's 5 days ahead of last year and almost 2 weeks ahead of average. Spring wheat was 97% planted, just over 3 weeks ahead of both last year and the 5-year average. Spring wheat was 50% emerged, over 2 weeks ahead of 2020, and 11 days ahead of average. Pasture condition rated 5% very poor, 11% poor, 32% fair, 47% good, and 5% excellent. Pasture growth has been slow in some areas. No problems reported with livestock. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians from Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota for their weekly updates of crop progress. A couple of other items: Nebraska, the number 3 corn-producing state in the nation, was 76% planted last year at this time. This year, it's 71%. The rolling 5-year average, though, is only 57% in Nebraska, so they're running ahead as well. Kansas, now a corn state as well as a wheat state, 54% planted. For their corn, 55% is the rolling 5-year average. In North Dakota, we talk about it a great deal as it relates to soybeans that ship out of the PNW. Just 17% of their soybeans are now in the ground. The 5-year average is 11%, but last year at this time, they were only 4% planted. Each and every Tuesday, we try to bring you an update of crop progress across the nation. Thanks again to the National Agricultural Statistics Service and USDA. Don't forget, tomorrow USDA NAS will produce its first look at the 2021-22 crop year for corn and soybeans and the supply and demand tables. Those will be released at 11 a.m. Central Time, and CONAB will release the updated figures for Brazil at 7 a.m. Both of them will be up on our website at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, not long after the release. Let's check in now with Don Day at Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thank you, Don, for being with us today. Sure appreciate that. Can you tell me about the next week or so for producers from the northwestern part of the Corn Belt all the way through the southeast and the Delta region?
Well, let's start in those northern areas, work our way south with the what we see with precipitation chances over the next week to 10 days. First of all, in the northern and northwestern areas of the Corn Belt, those areas continue to be drier than everybody else. And for the next week and a half, we do continue to see below normal precipitation across Minnesota, northern Iowa, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, especially North Dakota again. But as you go along and south of Interstate 80, that's when things pick up. It looks like over the next week and a half, Nebraska and then parts of Missouri and Kansas, then Oklahoma and into Texas look wet. And some of the winter wheat country in western Kansas, eastern Colorado, and the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles, they're going to get finally some beneficial rains. Then as you go further south in the Delta, it looks wet. You get down into the Delta region, it looks like an above-average precipitation pattern with a couple of systems that will produce quite a bit of shower and thunderstorm activity over the next week and a half or so.
You know, the thing we need as much as anything, and it's also one of those things you're not sure you want all the time, but we need a little heat in order to get the corn and the soybean crop up and out of the ground and running. Does it warm up?
That's a great question. You know, folks have been commenting about how cool the spring has been, and it goes back to April when it was really cooler than average for a large part of the central United States, and that's how May has started. The answer to your question, yes, we do see warmer temperatures coming, but it's going to be a really slow process. We're expecting temperatures at least here in the next week to still be trending a little bit below average. We're going to ease into summer, just not jump to it. For the next 5 days, expect below average temperatures. Any significant warming is going to come probably towards the beginning to the middle parts of next week. But most of the central and eastern United States, if you were to add all the temperatures up over the next 10 days, are still going to be a little bit below average.
Any indication of what the end of May, the month of June, might look like in the U.S.?
We should start to get ourselves into a more summertime pattern by then. That does include some warmer temperatures. We're going to keep an eye on those precipitation patterns later this month and in early June to see if some of those northern plains, some of that northwest Corn Belt area can get into some needed rain. But at least here in the next week and a half, it's going to be those areas more south and east that are going to get the best moisture.
Thank you so much.
All right, talk to you soon.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He joined us from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now let's turn our attention to what's been happening with the energy markets and the agricultural portion of them in particular. Stephen Platt is here. He's with Archer Financial Services. Steve, thank you for being with us. I suppose we probably should take up the pipeline that has been locked down because, well, of some problems with a cyber attack that's really having an impact across the Southeast and into the East Coast. Can you tell me a little bit about what that has done to the marketplace and what expectations for the rest of the week might be?
Well, in the grand scheme of things over the past year, you know, this is just a little bit of normalcy for the market, I guess. but needless to say, the Colonial Pipeline transports over 2 million gallons a day of gasoline, distillate, and other fuels through that pipeline. It stretches from Houston to New York Harbor in terms of bringing these products across the nation. It supplies a big part of its area is really the Southeast, which is actually experiencing some shortages in terms of gasoline stations and the like as people fill up. So it certainly has provided the basis for some movement. The movement, though, has been more in the product side of things, while crude has kind of lagged to some degree because of, you know, still an international bent with respect to it looking at the Indian situation and COVID infections rising. They are a big consumer of oil on the world market, but when you start looking at the products, those are focused on the East Coast and the Midwest in terms of their pricing. So the situation has been actually a little bit more under control. You have seen the margins on those products, particularly distillate and gasoline, actually expand to some degree, but not as much as maybe you would have thought they could have. And that might be a reflection of those markets actually having gotten tighter prior to the event here recently. And some of that is even linked to some of the biodiesel demand that we've seen, and also ethanol expansion of demand, and also the anticipation that summer driving and will heat up, and the freight markets have been expanding pretty dramatically, which has all helped feed into the strength to those product markets.
So the expectation until this happened was that gasoline demand in the United States was going to jump. And in fact, there was so much pent-up demand for all kinds of things that diesel and essentially renewable diesel, biodiesel, both were going to jump. That expectation, I would stay in place and through the summer months, I suppose?
Yes. And, you know, you certainly are anticipating the drive to pick up in terms of both the freight as the economy expands, and also in terms of gasoline consumption as people go back to work, in terms of more commuting. And a lot of people aren't taking trains like they did. So as that picks up, there is an expectation that the commuter demand will also expand, along with people taking vacations, spending money, going to Florida for sailboat trips and things like that. All those things will play into helping support the product markets. And one thing about refining, there were some refineries closing down when the cracks were very weak and they weren't making money. That a refinery trying to come back online is real slow in terms of being able to make up for it. And we've seen that in terms of the tightness in those product stocks.
Hey, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. He joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.